Good evening. I am Evelyn Turner, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Evelyn.
And I ask him to please remember the varying heights. I said, when you finish, will you push the mic up? Did you see him push the mic up? No, but I'll push it up some. Of course, I really don't need a mic. But I'm going to try to show off tonight because I'm one of those loud barroom drinkers. And if I want to, I can be heard down there without a mic. But every time I say I'm an alcoholic, a little still, small voice says inside, you can say that again. Now, if I were to apply for a job as an alcoholic, I would be overqualified. I like to keep it simple, you know. Oh, and of course I want to thank those who ask me. It's really an honor. I don't know if it's a pleasure as yet, but it's an honor. I'd also like to clear up any doubt in your mind. I'm not Irish Catholic. I say that in no reference to any religious background, but so often the male species always dances, I'm a good Irish Catholic, and how they fought and how tough they were. And I claim equal rights. I defy any good Irish Catholic drunk to stand up against a good black Baptist drunk. We can stand toe-to-toe with you. Then also as a woman drunk, of course, most of us are ladies when we drink. You ever hear a woman alcoholic didn't say, I'm a lady? Of course, they had a popular song out many years ago, said they had lady bears too, you know. But I'd like to tell you how I was a type of woman drinker that when they said glass, said bottoms up, I didn't know they meant the glass. And incidentally, whatever I say tonight is my own opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous. As such, no one speaks for AA. Of course, in my own group, many times they do ask me to keep my opinions to myself. But because you are a polite audience, I'm going to give you some of my opinions tonight. And I saw many of the newer ones here tonight, and I'm so glad to see. And let me give you a little word of advice, that you can always practice the principles. When you have a speaker like me, you can do step 11. Practice through prayer and meditation that this too will pass. You get a closer conscious contact with God. Each one of us have a great role in AA. I have really one that gave me my conscious contact with God because I was going to take him up to help meet God, but he didn't, and I thank him for that because every time I saw him, I said, oh, my God. In all sincerity, I have thoroughly enjoyed being a part of this convention. I am not as such a convention goer. I don't know how many things, you know, but we won't go into those to details now. You know, it's always somebody, if you're worried about step 4, rest assured that somebody will help you to take your inventory, even without you asking. I know one time I was, what little humility I didn't have, and I was told, I'm speaking here, I'm speaking there. Little guy sitting over there said, Ev, you know, you're not that great of a speaker. He said, it's just that most women don't want to get up and tell all their personal business. Then another one said to me, Ev, said, I hear you on the speaking circuit now. Oh, yes, yes, yes. He said, you know, I was on the speaking circuit too, he said, but an old guy said to me, said, Frank, said, if you're talking all the time, when are you listening? Word to the wise, be sufficient. You know, listen, you'll hear him. They'll tell you. And well, I think, too, that I've grown a great deal. A gentleman sat down next to me today and he asked me how many years I had been without a drink. I don't always say sober because that is a state and it's a lot of mind and emotion. Some of us really, and I am one that you wonder sometimes about their state of sanity, but I have not had a drink for quite a while. And he said, you know, I wonder about some of the older ones, why they don't seem to make many changes. And since I knew, I didn't think he knew me, I didn't take it very personal, but I didn't like it. And I said to him, well, you know, it depends on what you came in here with, you know. Now, I want to tell you, God didn't have much to work with when I came in, so I've come a long ways. Got a long ways to go, too, but I have to tell you this because most of the time it's not very visible. And when this gentleman was reading and he started laughing, I thought, does he know me, too? When he said, some of us suffer from grave emotional illness, but they do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Now, when I came in, I didn't know that, and I thought I had added something very special to AA. And it was many years later that I found out they were taking side bets that I could not make it. And somebody said, she won't make it. She's got a wet brain. And my spouse said, but she's not hurting anybody. Let her come on for the coffee. She seems to enjoy it. And I thought I had added some class there. I never. In fact, I told him, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm neurotic. I liked that because it was associated with women a little higher echelon. Truthfully, I was telling the truth. I was, once they got me sober, crazy as could be. I would have said psychotic. I had a very limited vocabulary of initials only. Now, I know many of you have gotten sober, and you hear them say, I don't want to hear any profanity, and I don't want to this or that. I never, never mean to be vulgar or common. But there's some parts of my story I can't tell nicely. I've tried to clean it up best I could, but it just don't fit into that category. So bear with me. If you hear something to you that sounds like profanity, then you know profanity when you hear it. I also hear someone say, now that I don't drink, I don't do this and I don't do that, and I believe them. It's their story. And now that I don't drink, I don't do a lot of things either. But now let me tell you why I don't do them. First of all, I'm too scared to do them. Secondly, I'm too old to do them. And thirdly, nobody's asking me to do them. So that didn't elevate me to sainthood. I'd love to also be able to tell you a coherent story, like they say, how it was and how you got here and how it is now. I've tried, but that's not the way it is. I do the best I can with what I have. Someone asked me, said, Devon, you know, I hear so many people say they're going to just get up and speak this or that. They don't have it together. And one of the gentlemen had some papers today, and I thought, maybe I better write it down. But I can't understand my writing, so I said, just leave it alone, Evelyn. I am originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Good place to be from, too, I might add. It's affectionately known as the City of Brotherly Love, a name I took quite literally. I tried to love every brother I met. And just to keep up with the changing times, because I know many of you don't know what I'm talking about, but I am so glad it wasn't named the City of Sisterly Love. Because I don't know what kind of story I would have had. And I say that because I was willing to go to any length to get a drink. I wasn't always able, but I was willing. And the reason I didn't do a lot of things was because it wasn't asked of me. But I certainly was ready and available. I gave things to people that didn't even want it, but I gave it to them anyway. I went along with the drinks. You know, it's terrible. I mean, I didn't even know I had the right to say no. And by the time I learned it, nobody gave me an opportunity to use it. But it's all right. I learned. You learn. Sometimes late, but you learn. And I remember when I was looking around to try to find a woman that I thought might be considered worse than I was. I thought, and I finally, now this is with hindsight, came up with the women of the evening. But now that I have been around for a while, I look at that a little differently, and I realize that the only difference was, I can say this, that the Lord loveth a cheerful giver. And I am twice blessed. Because I have given away a fortune. And that's just pure ignorance. That wasn't any virtue in it. Of course, I did say one time that I couldn't work in a bar, even though I was in there as long as it was open, because my family wouldn't like me to work in a bar. And they wouldn't, and that's what I felt. But never mind me sitting in there all day long, you know. Philadelphia, the bars open 6 o'clock in the morning, and they close at 2. And I was standing out there one morning, the bartender said to me, he said, I don't see why Sam don't give you the key. You're here earlier than I am. I said, well, that might be an idea, you know. And I would help him to set up and all, and I'd be reaching over there getting 3 beers. He said, just a minute, Evan, I'll get it for you. All right, all right. But yet I said, I'm not an alcoholic. Now, I like to go back a little bit before I started to drink and tell you about that person, because I like to erase all doubt. I know somebody sitting back there saying, but she didn't have what I had to contend with and such, you know. Because I had so many excuses why I drank, you know. Because I told somebody, I wished I had been born rich instead of beautiful. You know, stupid things, you know. And of course, first and most, I was a minority. And being black was a problem. That's why I drank so. And then I got in here and saw all of you. I thought, wonder what their problem was. Damn, I had used that for years. I said, so that's why I'm saying all of this was, you know, somebody's fault. In fact, I was very intelligent before I stopped drinking. And I blamed my mother for everything. I told her had she slept that night, she wouldn't have had to be worried like she is now. And she agreed with me, because I knew she was the source of my life, see. But from a very small child, I rebelled at an early age. You know, I think they put glasses on me when I opened my eyes. And when I was young, they used to say, guys don't make passes at girls who wear glasses, so I didn't see part of 10 years because I sat on my glasses trying to laugh and grin when I thought it was appropriate. Of course, they told me if you keep wearing them when you get older, you won't have to. And I guess there's some truth in that if you see the thickness of these and know my age, and Nick should be a seeing-eye dog. So I guess they didn't lie either. It's always two sides to a coin. Then it seems to me I was born this height. And all the girls were little and sweet and cute and demure and quiet. I've always been loud. Always loud and wrong. I'm still loud. I'm not always wrong. Many times, but not always. So I didn't like my height. I didn't like my race. I just didn't like anything about me. In fact, my maiden name was Evelyn Elizabeth Washington. And I used to write my name E. Elizabeth Washington because I did not like Evelyn. And that was the greatest problem in my whole life. And at times it still causes me some problems. It's accepting Evelyn as she is. And because I have that difficulty, I have difficulty with you that can't accept me as I am. You are supposed to understand, but I don't. You know, I think you're following me if you're not in accord. That you know how you want everybody else to understand. I say anything I want to you and hurt your feelings, but you're supposed to understand I'm a sick alky. But you say something to me, she hurt my feelings, and as long as she's been in the program, seems like she wouldn't do that. You know. Common sense should be put up there among the defects, too. But anyway. I did all right in elementary school and junior high school because I had discipline. I rebelled totally against authority. But anybody knows to be successful in life, in any phase of life, you must have some discipline. And so in elementary and junior high school, where we were told what to do, even though I didn't like it, I did it. But when I got to senior high school, they gave us freedom of choice. You don't give a person like me freedom of choice. They say that man is the only creature that God made that he gave him free will. I wouldn't want to say he made a mistake, but I wonder sometimes. So I learned to drink wine. Now, as I said, my story is kind of two-sided because both of my grandfathers were ministers. And of course, my grandmother was more of a minister than either of them. And all I heard as a young child was, thou shalt not. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. And on Sunday, to do anything but breathe was a sin. So I said, well, what does one do that one enjoys oneself? You're going to hell anyway, so I thought, well, why, you know, stick around and fool around, just go on and enjoy yourself now and take no detour. So the quickest way I knew then, and I know some of you people are very young out here and say, what? But when I was very young, the biggest thing was to drink and smoke. I know you can see, but about approximately how old I am, and I'm telling you, then we bought cigarettes loose. 6 for a nickel, and we had to put in for that. And we started with blackberry wine. Now, I know the drinks have changed because I spoke of some dark port, and one of the little new girls said, what does she mean, dark port? Wine! Wine, honey, wine! Of course, you know, now they have the designer drugs and wine. I'm talking about good, full, red-bodied wine. Now, and I tell you, alcohol was always around the house, and I actually saw alcoholics, but somehow I just dismissed that. But I remember when I was quite young, whenever they gave a party and alcohol was served, everybody just got loving. You know, I was a cute little girl. Dance for the ladies, say this for the ladies, and I could eat everything I wanted, and then the party would be over and they'd start sobering up and they... What the hell are you still doing up? Get upstairs! You know, so I associated alcohol and good times. You know, there's always a dual thing. Like, God rest my mother's soul, but she used to tell me if you lie, you'll steal. If you steal, you kill. Oh, she made a big to-do about a little lie. But on the next breath, she'd tell me, go tell the insurance man I'm not home. Well, that's a lie! And see, I'm a sensitive child. It takes that kind. In fact, when I opened and said that I was an Irish Catholic, you know, so many of us get up here and talk about coming from a good Christian home or religious background. Sometimes I'm wondering if that's not the wrong way to raise a child since all of us are sitting in AA. But on the serious side, too, that might be a positive aspect that we all are sitting in, eh? Just depends on how you look at it. So when I took, they used to give me drinks, like, for medicinal purposes. If I had a toothache, to hold it on the tooth and spit it out. And it really would calm the hurt. So later on, when I wanted to save the dentist money, I tried to drink a little bit and hold it on my tooth, but it went over the tooth so fast. But it had the same results. You know, it killed the pain. You know, alcohol will remove anything. We know that, don't you? Jobs, homes, families, cars. And wine will do a lot more for you. Really, if you must drink, and I don't say go back, but if you're going, don't fool around with no champagne and stuff like that. Start out with some full-bodied cheap wine. You get more for your money. More fights, more itch, more everything. Wine even changed my color. All under here was dark, and I was itching, the wine itch. I said that was Lifebuoy soap, so I stopped using soap. And water, you know, a lot of things. Now, then, the progression of alcoholism, when I first started drinking, I drank cocktails, and I used to get so sick. And they said, Evelyn, you drink those sweet drinks and mix them. You know, I don't think I ever chewed anything because on the way back, recycled alcohol. the cherry would come up, the ice had melted, but anything, the fruit that was in there. So I started, they said, drink seltzer. And, of course, the first drink I drank was some brandy and seltzer. That didn't do so good. But I was willing to go to any lengths to learn how to drink. So during the time, I got rid of the chaser. I got rid of the ice. I got rid of the glass. So in the night, I said, "Ooh, look at these fancy cups." I said, "You know, the mayonnaise jars didn't have no handles on them." Now, many of you are not from that era, but that used to be what we drank out of. Now, I don't know where the mayonnaise jars came from, because I wasn't buying any mayonnaise, but we always had them. They were nice size to hold, and they were the pint size. And I said to somebody, "Where was the jelly glasses?" They said, "Evan, that was the fine china." I said, oh, yeah. But anyway, when I took that first drink, ooh, I got shorter. I got happy. I got witty. Oh, and I was warm glow. Like people say, you say with such vigor, just like it was yesterday. It was beautiful. Do you hear me? Oh, I just shrank and I smiled and I danced and I was charming. That's it. Now, I was sick as a dog afterwards, but that's neither here nor there. I grabbed for the beard, and you ever ride a beard around trying to catch it as it comes back around this way, and then the sheets won't let you get a good hold, but you keep scratching, then finally you make a decision just lay there on the floor like you were. Now, you know, too, I remember, you know, it's a funny thing, our dual side of society. If a man gets drunk and comes in the neighborhood and by maybe Monday or so, he puts on a clean shirt, usually a white shirt. The neighbors say, "Mr. Brown, you really toss one off. You ought to get yourself together." And he smiles and all's forgotten. But now you let Mrs. Brown come down that street drunk. You know the one who talks about her the most? Another woman. I know that because I did it. I say, "Would you look at that hussy? Ain't that a disgrace?" I said, "Jesus, if I ever staggered down the street, I would stop drinking." I wasn't lying, I didn't know. I staggered down the street. I ran down the street. You know them running drunks where you run forward and you're like that big toy, you never go all the way over, but you go back and forth and you rock. And you get that really silly look on your face and you laugh. Because you know where you want to go, but your feet and legs don't seem to hear you. And the people are looking at you, and then you hold on to the post or something, and then when they start across, you run right over ahead of them. Or walk right, I used to walk right up close to them, and they thought I was going to rob them or something. They'd be looking like, I needed them to guide me across the street, you know? I got chased down the street. I got knocked down the street. And sometimes I just laid on the street. Got tired. You know, sometimes that whiskey gets heavy. You know, and you're just laid and your mind is going, but the rest of your body, they say the brain tells your body what to do, but my brain was ossified and it wasn't sending out any signal, so I just lay there until time passed. By the way, if you are really an alcoholic, and I know many of you worry about being anonymous, who's going to find out you're in here? I hate to disillusion you, but usually if you step in here and say you're an alcoholic, stay, because you're already overdue. But if you should be dumb enough to say you had a blackout, please don't turn around and say, "But I didn't do this and I didn't do that." Say you don't think you did, hear? Because there's somebody in life will tell you what you did, and you don't even have to ask them. They'll volunteer it. You know, in the beginning, I would walk up to you and say, "What did I do last night?" Early in the game, I didn't know what I was doing. And they said, "Girl, you had a good time. Oh, you dance and you..." They should say, "S-O-F, she's the life of the party." I didn't know it was spelled A-double-S-S. But anyway, you know, and because I needed that attention, that the more I just performed, more and more performing, just like a circus horse, you know, and just, you know, how... And towards the end, they forget to ask me, you know? Or they'd call me, "Evelyn." And I'd say, "What?" You know, when you get to that end where your nerves is on the edge and somebody whispers and it's too loud. "What? Oh, you... Well, she don't never want you around the house no more. What did I do? They couldn't even get the words out. I said, well, was I the only one drunk? No, but you, I don't know you. And I said, that's a lie. But, because, you know, some of the things, it was a matter of time. I couldn't have done that much. Most of it I knew I'd done, but really it's a lapse of time. I couldn't have done all of that in that little short of time. But what they said, it sounded like me, so. But anyway, as I said, I changed drinks. I changed cities. Of course, we always went over to New York. That was just a little run. That was Los Angeles or something, you know. Well, I was in the big city. I was in the Big Apple. That's what they told me. I don't know if that I was there, but I believe it now, you know. And I was at the Savoy. Every year I was there, you know. And I went around with show people for a long time. And let's have this understood. I was never paid to be on the stage. I understand I made a couple appearances. So I don't worry about my anonymity, because I don't know who was in the theater that day, but I was with a popular singing group, and they went on. I couldn't take anything from them, and when they went on, they said, come on, baby, and baby went right on with them. Of course, baby went right out of there into the psycho ward, but it's all right. I mean, I was on the stage. And I loved all the glitter and tinsel that the show world had to offer. And there's nothing wrong with that, but life is not a great big party. You know, a continual diet of just ice cream is not good. We enjoy it. But I never, never wanted the party to end. And I used to wonder why I never wanted to go home. Because I lived in a fairly clean, comfortable house. Not necessarily a home, but a nice house. And what it was now that I look at it, I never wanted to be alone with Evelyn. And yet there is that moment before I would go off to sleep all over into Never Never Land, that I had to see me. I had to do step 10, even though I didn't know I was doing it. And when I couldn't explain to myself why, that's when I became very frightened. And I had two great fears in my life, and one was Milton's poem, On My Blindness, and certainly that was a justified fear. And the other was on insanity. I thought one of the greatest illness that could befall anybody was mental illness. And yet I saw such symptoms within me. And I used to be one of those that said, once you're crazy, you're always crazy. Because you know there's always a crazy Mary in the block. I don't know why she's named Mary, but she always was. Here come old crazy Mary, she's off again. And as I said, once you're crazy, you're always crazy. Till he stuck me in the booby hatch, and then, of course, it was a mental illness that could be relieved, you know. Nothing like changing your idea when the shoe's on your foot. But I was in the right place. I knew that. I hooped and hollered when they put me there that, you know, I don't know why I'm here, but I knew why I was there. I was an alcoholic. They didn't even address alcoholism. I was in there with bona fide nuts. But I'm a little ahead of my story. So as I said, I went to New York. All the places where the partying was, you know, let the good times roll. Real party girl, you know, I was one of them drunks that all got all dressed up to get drunk. You've seen them women, feathers and flowers and, you know, and all of this and that, wigs and things. Sometimes the wig would be around this way and I'd push it over that way. I thought it was really mine. I'd forget it. I'd throw it back, you know. Throw it off sometime. It didn't matter, you know. I'd say, let's get drunk and be somebody. I don't know who I was going to be, depending on the mood I was in. A fighter or a lover, it didn't matter. I went to see the opera Carmen one time. And I come out and stuck a fresh red rose in my mouth. And, oh, yeah. And the next day I said, what happened to my mouth? And it was always wondered what happened to my mouth. Because I'd like to tell you, Al-Anons, you cannot beat alcoholism out of anybody. Because they really tried on me, pressure at various ends, but it didn't work. Another little message I'd like to relay to the Al-Anon, because I've also been a member of Al-Anon. When I go in, they say to me, and I just poured all the whiskey down the toilet. Wait. I'm an alcoholic. I still have a healthy respect for alcohol. You hear me? Don't throw it down no toilet. Put it aside. Everybody's not an alcoholic. You know, you think about it. We have different thoughts towards alcohol. I read in the paper when San Francisco they weren't not going to sell any more Richard's Wild Irish. What? Look at that. No, that's crazy. And they're killing Chinese girls. I'm over there worried about they're not selling no more Wild Irish shoes to them drunks out there. Ooh, I said, that's going to be a mass riot. Ooh, it's going to be terrible out there. You know, I go down the streets and I kick the bottles over to see what it is. Usually it's wine bottles. You never see no champagne bottles or things in the street. Ooh. You know? Kind of gets my interest. I went in a Chinese restaurant. You know how pungent their food smells. But somebody came behind me. I said, that's an old fashioned. Now, when your nose can tell you after 30 years that's an old fashioned, you're an alcoholic, honey. You hear me? And I turned around. Sure enough, it was an old fashioned. And then I go one place and somebody said, they said, oh, that's some little vial of drinks. I said, well, how much do they cost? They said, Evelyn, what is it to you? I said, well, damn, that ain't even enough to put in your hollow of your tooth. Or it just bothered me. You know, I'm still very alert and aware of alcohol. Let's say that. All right, now let's get on because the time is going. Well, we're still in Philly. Well, I will leave Philly now. Of course, I've gotten every place I went, I got drunk. Let's understand that. I left my front teeth down Atlantic City. My foot missed the brass rail and my mouth hit the bar. But the doctor said it was nervous exhaustion, so I got 2 weeks sick leave for that. I used that for a long time. You know, you hear people say Washington is a government-oriented city. Most of our workers, and I hear them every now and then, talking about the government is not fair, the government is not fair. And it is not. Because if it was, I wouldn't have been able to retire from it. Because if they had been doing what they were supposed to do, I should have been gone. But nobody wanted to be responsible, or not responsible, nobody wanted to go through all of that it took to fire an alcoholic. Now, there used to be a time they fired you for an alcoholic. Now they put them through the treatment centers and all of this and send them to us and then send them back, you know, and rewash them, and it's all right. The same amount comes in. But I know even there, they called me in one time. The boss said to me, Miss Turner, said, you use quite a bit of sick leave. I says, yes. He said, wait a minute. He said, every Monday? After every payday? And when he turned the sheet over, it looked like a checkerboard, you know? The red spots. And I said, well, you know, women have illnesses that are not the same as men, you know. I said, I think I'm going through an early menopause. Oh, I thought that was so clever. I told that for at least two or four or five bars. You know, I wasn't doing number fooling myself. He knew what the score was. But I also remember truth to me. Here again, truth is truth no matter where you hear it. And to me, Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program, and spiritual foundation is to be really the beginning, as far as I'm concerned, of all of our basic major religions. And I read the only difference in what other people told me and AA has told me was not to drink. It was the first drink that made you drunk. But I remember him saying to me, and I worked around, at that time, I made more per diem than I did at the end. I was a secretary, but in the beginning, I worked on turret lays and all the machinist jobs. And he said, you know, Miss Turner, I pass your machine. And it's always a lot of men around your machine, he says, and you may think that makes you look very popular. He said, but really, he says, your family's not here, is it? Are they? And I looked, I was 30-some years, I said, is this man crazy? What has he got to talk about? Is my family here? He said, because I don't think if your mother was here, you would act like you do. I thought, you talk about meddling in somebody's business. Now, he's in my business. You know, we always got this personal business. Who ask him? He says, but I watch. He said, and what you think makes you look popular, really? You look quite common. And I thanked him very much. You know, with a few adjectives. And parted. But I really never forgot that. Because he cared, and I didn't understand love and couldn't accept it. And he was trying to shock me into really where I was. But anyways, I said I drank from Atlantic City. Oh, God, Cape May, New Jersey. That was a beautiful drinking place. You could drink on the curbstone, you know, just in your bathing suit. Ooh, it was just lovely. Nobody say stop, when? You know, I was in there all the time, around the clock. And the worst thing ever happened when I got to Atlantic City and the bars was open 24 hours a day and I couldn't stay awake. I tried to hold my eyes open. I splashed cold water. And I finally passed out. And when I come to, I said, "What did you do? Where were you? Where'd you go? Where'd you go?" They was just drinking. I said, "Oh, my God, let me catch up. Let me catch up." You know, that did the whole thing. And as I said, I used to get all dressed up to get drunk. Ned Black, this or that. You know, and fancy hats with bells. I'd smoke through the hat, set the hat on fire one time. Orphan, burn orphans with all these flowers and things like that, you know. But one of the things I like to mention, I have requests. I talk so much, I have various requests at meetings. And one of them is the story of the red shoes. Now, when I tell you this, I came into church one Sunday morning and my minister's wife said, "Oh, Helen, I was just telling somebody about you in the red shoes." Now, when I tell you this, I want to know what was my minister's wife doing telling anybody this story. But maybe she was talking to a potential member. I don't know. But you've heard of blackouts. It got to the point where I told you they'd forget to ask me, but sometime I'd wake up and they couldn't get off without me. So this was towards the end. I had many false bottoms. They had my face in their hands talking to me now. "Now, Evelyn, please. This is a nice party. Don't go there and tear your rump here." I said, "Would you please? I've got class I haven't even used." I hadn't used it yet either, by the way. But to the audacity to tell me to behave myself. So I went out, charged a nice outfit. Now, I must tell you I'm not going to tell you how to cheat on the program, but you make amends by back. But my name was washed, and there was no need of paying them bills when I got sober. I was turning. All right, but I charge up them anything, you hear me? Every time they ask, "Cash or charge?" "Charge, charge, charge." You thought it was the end of the light brigade. Every time, "Charge, charge." Really, I didn't lose that habit either almost until I retired. But then I was just getting dressed up to get drunk. And, oh, I was all dolled up. Now, I have very large feet that fit my body. But I used to think the shorter the shoe, the smaller the foot looked. I didn't know the more weird the face looked, you know, when it was actually in pain. And when he told about my foot hurting tonight, I thought, "It's come a long ways, darling. I can still walk down the street." But I used to buy very expensive, beautiful shoes. Of course, I had to buy them expensive. Just didn't have none but shoeboxes or something that would fit my feet. But I would come in and walk all around and tell you, "Look at me," and then I'd kick the shoes off and tell you I was the barefoot Contessa. I lost a pair of shoes like that, too, one night. I took them off and couldn't go back to get them before. I really won't go into why I couldn't go back, but I didn't. Let's say I didn't go back. I wore them once to that party and took them off. I know the lady of the house, when she came home, was wondering whose shoes they were, if they were still there. I've never seen them since. But anyway, I had on a pair of high-heel red pumps. And I excused myself to go to the ladies' room. Well, I'd had a couple of drinks. You know, tell you, I just need a couple to get yourself together for the party, you know, because to go through all that formality of, "Hello, Ellen, will you have a drink?" and all like that, you know, and then they talk. "Would you care for a little drink?" And then they sit there and you, yeah. And then they finally come back with a little drink. So I drank two or three big drinks before I went out. So I didn't have to sit there and wait for all of that. And I said, "Oh, excuse me, I've got to go to the ladies' room." And I always had a long cigarette holder. You know, I always wanted to be that sophisticated lady, as I told you, with those big long stem glasses and these long cigarette holders and all. And I went upstairs, and somehow I must have had a mini blackout. That's all I can think of. When I came back down, everybody was looking, and I thought, you know, I didn't know I looked that good. Somehow I had gotten mixed up, and instead of taking off the red shoes, the only thing I had on was the red shoes. Start out to be that kind of party, but it developed into many things after that initial show. But that's just some of the things that happened. And little quieter things, I fell into a rock garden one night, about as big as this podium, but I couldn't get out of it. And sometimes, really, no harm meant. They talk about the earth people,
But sometimes they have problems, too, with sanity. She looked out there and says, "You get out of my rock garden." Well, that's what I was trying to do. She said, "You don't get out of there, I'm going to call the police." And I said to her, "I wish you would." Well, I did. I wasn't trying to be smart. Maybe they would help me out the damn garden. Because I ain't touched them little pink and purple flies. I was hitting rocks.
I don't know. I went into another blackout. I'm out. Evidently, I got out of the thing. I don't know how. And maybe I don't even want to know how. You know, sometimes you have controlled, convenient amnesia. So we don't have to follow through. But these are the various things I did. You know, you never could tell what I was doing. Now, this is the nicer part of it. I worked for the Navy one. On my last tour, one of the tours of duty, I went to Philadelphia Navy Yard and Washington Navy Yard, and they had a Christmas party, and I passed out, and when I came to, they didn't have my food, and they wanted to give me the money. No, I wanted the food. And one thing led to another, and the ensigns were standing up there, you know, with the hats at attention, and they didn't look beautiful. I love a uniform. And I looked at the nice gentleman, and they wouldn't give me the money back. And so I gave them a salute that they had not seen. You know, you talk about barefoot, and I was bare-bottom. I just turned around and told them what to do and where and how far to go. Very nice thing sitting. I'm sure they appreciated it. Now, you know, I say these things. I say them, and we laugh, and I laugh. But it's kind of like laugh, clown, laugh. Some of the things I laugh most about, I hurt most about. And I say these things not to make you laugh, but that there may be a girl, woman, or man, if she's listening, that it might help you to know that you too are a child of God. And just as he reached out, or I allowed him to help me, he'll help you. So it doesn't pay for me to sit up here and tell you a nice little story. I share my experiences. It's not always the same as anybody else's. But I want you to know that it's something about a woman, an alcoholic, that really society, it's a man's world, it kills me, but it just is. You know, a man that has a whole lot of women is considered very popular. A woman has a whole lot of men is considered quite common, just that simple, you know. In fact, I've heard them in AA say, some of you don't. Well, let me tell you, you get what you need, not what you want. You sit cute. You know, they have their nose up like we use merchandise. You know, hold it, you know. We ain't getting no values when we get you either, two of a kind. But anyway, that's enough of how I got here. And, of course, I don't have time to go through the other story. The doctor told me one, I don't know what was wrong with him, that, you know, I said, then why do I always go down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, these shady, seedy places? It was fascinating to me. You know, I always wanted to go to Paris. But I didn't want to go to see all this or that. I wanted to go down Pig Alley, you know, where people live like they wanted to live, you know, with knives and berets and throw wine from here to there. And, oh, I love that kind of thing, fascination. The doctor said, well, Miss Turner, you get married, you'll settle down. So I hurried up and got married. And unfortunately, people try to help us with our stories. And everybody said I was such a nice girl until I married that no-count guy. Now, a nice girl is not hanging out in a place nicknamed the Bucket of Blood looking for a husband. But I got one. And I want you to know this. We deserved one another. First time both in-laws was right. One, my family said he wasn't worth a damn. They were right. His family said I wasn't worth a damn. They was right. The only thing I mention here is, because in making amends, there were friends and members of the family who felt as though I did not owe him any amends. But looking back, he was addicted to drugs. But looking back, I can see now where Dan loved me as much as he could. And this is all God asked of any of us. He didn't love me in the Hollywood style or the way I would have liked. He was a sick person too, and he had a sick person. So I will forevermore be grateful to him that he did not introduce me to drugs. Because at that time, if he'd have said, come, we can get to the moon, I would have followed him. So so I owe him that. I do not know where he is, but as I speak, I hope somewhere, somehow, he's all right. I don't know because I never hear. But I just think I would mention it. That's not what I used to say about him, but anyway, how did I get here? I have a whole total vision, different version of him when I want to. But I first came to AA in 1948. Now, you young people sitting out there, that was AD, because once I said that, one girl, oh, she said, you know what, Ev? You were so before I was even born. And since I thought I was still 16, I said to her, yes, honey, and if you keep on talking, I'm going to be sober after you die. Scared her to death. But really, you don't know, all sorts of things happening. One night, I spoke at what we call the Magic Monastery in Washington. It's the real nut house. I mean, where they have all of us. And for some reason, I spoke more or less on the mental part of my illness. And I thought, Evan, you don't have to identify this far. They understand that you're an alcoholic. But sometimes, now this again is just my vision, when people ask, like Vicente said this morning, how do you get to be this or that? I think the God of my understanding, A, has helped me to make my own personal religion more relevant to me. And there's a part in a great book where he says to someone to go and speak. He says, I can't speak. I can't talk. What will I say? And he says, open your mouth and I'll speak for you. And so this night I talked and I didn't know. Alan said to me, you go home every night? Yes, I've been sober 10 years. Sure, I went home every night. But he didn't know. And I thought, well, it's all right, Evan, to be crazy if he can identify. I mean, I'm not laughing. What I'm saying is, he felt the hope for him. If I was able to go home, that maybe he too could get out of there. But anyway, as I said, I didn't accept AA the first time. I thought it was a good program, but I was not an alcoholic. I rationalized I had not done this, I had not done that. I said, I'm too young. When I get that old and do that much, I'll be back. But I can never tell a story without how did I get here. They say that alcoholism is a family illness, and it is. We touch everybody around us. When I first came in and they talked about making amends of those we'd hurt, I thought of physically attacking people. I'm a chicken all the way through. I just know people hit me. I never really won any fight. I started lots of them. But I know now that I harmed people psychologically. The harm I had brought upon my mother, I could never make amends because I couldn't even tell her. I wouldn't want to tell her. I wouldn't want her to know. She came to hear me speak after I had been sober 15 years. And I cleaned that story up that night. There, some of my friends said, what is Turner talking about? And my darling mother reached over to my sister and says, I didn't know she drank like that. I don't want to say my mother was a liar. But that's love. That's true love. She just could not believe. And I wouldn't want her to know, you know, like the questions they asked you, where have you been all night? Now, that's a good one. You think and you think. You could have been right upstairs, but you don't know that. So you try to look wise. And she said, don't people get sick of you? I'm sure they did. I didn't know. But she would ask, never God, you're not drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock at night, you know. That woman and I, we never come to any current agreements. But anyway, it got so that the family got in the act. And by the way, I'm the oldest of nine. So, Vincente, you know I had a lot of trouble with eight of them coming behind me, you know, when I had been the star of the show for 6 years. But, of course, it was well understood now. Back to the illness. My grandmother, who I know loved me dearly, said to my mother, Helen, something's wrong with that child. Now, she saw that early in life, you know, but they didn't know what to do about it, so they let it go on. You know, they said, you know, it's so nice to stand here and say I'm Evelyn Turner, because for so many years I was a pronoun. Where is it? Oh, Jesus, here it comes. There it is. Ooh. And you'd be standing right there, and they'd be talking about you. You know, my mother be on the phone, I'd be laying kind of horizontal over there. And she said, yes, child, it's right here, looking right at me.
And it better not come back in here drunk tonight.
Well, I wasn't even going to get drunk, but since she said that, I got up and got drunk. You understand that. But anyway, the family got together and decided yours truly would go to Marblehead, Massachusetts. And it gets to a point where you have no say. You follow directions. Like go to hell, drop dead, do that. You try to do all them things, and you ain't got no say in the matter. So when it was agreed upon, I went to Marblehead. Now, the reason they sent me to Marblehead was they didn't know about the illness, and they thought Marblehead was a rich, at that time, suburban area of Boston, and only wealthy people lived out there, so they thought financially I would not be able to socialize. And there was only two blacks in the whole town. I was one of them. But I want to say something, and this here, again, A takes no opinion on outside issues. But it's my opinion that we didn't need all the civil rights laws. All you need is two alcoholics and a bottle of alcohol. You got integration. Now, you may not have it for but a while, but you got it. And what happened was my prospective employer was a full-blown alcoholic. And it was just like throwing an old rabbit in the briar patch. I was the upstairs maid. I thought it was my house. I used to come down with my little cap on a jaunty angle, and they'd say, oh, Miss Marsh, and I can call their names. All of these people are since deceased. I'm not breaking any anonymity here. Oh, your upstairs maid has such personality. The upstairs maid was drunk most of the time. And Mr. Marsh always stood on my side. The cook would die, but did we? One time I was going to show him how my grandmother seared a turkey for Thanksgiving, and we got carried away, and we was drinking scotch and left the turkey sitting in the middle of the gas stove, and it burned up. You know, little nice things like that. Then they went away one time while the house was being renovated, and in Marblehead they have Pickwick Ale. It's a lot of strong-bodied beer. When they came back, the gardener was drunk. The electricians was drunk. I threw a party. Everybody was drunk. I think the dog was drunk. But what I did not know was that Mrs. Marsh was an Al-Anon. And I thought she was a dumb, stupid woman. But she'd rather stand there and watch me and her husband in the breakfast room than him being down in Boston buying mink coats. But I didn't know that. I thought we was putting something over on her. And what can two drunk, stupid make... make signals on what they would like to do. You know, they can't follow through. So she didn't even bother. She just stood there and watched us, the two fools. But it was two couples that came to the house. And I could see them. I mean, it was so beautiful. It was an estate named Thornhedge. I could see them drive up the driveway. And as soon as a strange car came, I started making drinks. But, you know, if people come too long and never have a drink, you just can't keep making it and drinking it. And I made a mistake one day of asking them, didn't you ever drink? Never, never ask members of Alcoholics Anonymous if they ever drank. They held the meeting so long that I almost got sober that night. I thanked them very much, and I never made them a drink anymore. But the seed was planted, and so when I came... I said, oh, good. My stepfather drinks. I said, when I go back to Philly, I'm going to tell him about it. Now, I must like to say this here again, too. I didn't suffer because he was my stepfather. I suffered because he was an alcoholic. And for the 60-some years that I knew him as a stepfather, only once in all his drinking and all, did he ever mention that I was not his child, and that was because... a person from his home met us and said to him, Lloyd, I didn't know you had a daughter this old. And he said at that time, no, this is Helen's daughter. And I think that needs a lot of, takes kind of a fine person to do this. In fact, that same 15-year-old meeting, my brother came, and his wife said to him, oh, Evelyn is just your half-sister. He said, is she? I didn't know it. So you see, I was the only one that talked about all this. Even in my story, it's just I was illegitimate, and I was this, and I was all that. This was in me. Whatever, I'm not all wrong, but a lot of things is my attitude and my looking at things that makes it bad. And I say that because I did come home and I did tell Daddy. Unfortunately, Daddy was still drinking when he died. But I, in telling it to him, I heard some of it, and I said, maybe I could do with some of that. I thought they had different degrees of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought certainly I'd be in the elementary class. And at that time, I was a periodic drunk, and I went down in a group. Headquarters was St. James Place in Philadelphia, and I'm a very sentimental, theatrical person. And I said, I'm going down to St. James Infirmary. Goodbye, fool world. And the first meeting they sent me to was a priest in uniform and a policeman in uniform. So I said, oh, I see what happens here. No. But anyway, I didn't accept that. But I never forgot AA. And I was to go to Washington to see the next change. Because I thought marriage was the answer. The marriage had failed. And I was tired. You know, we get to that point where you're tired, where you run out of lies, you can't even lie to yourself anymore. I'd spent 2 years with a psychiatrist. I thought the whole answer was in psychiatry. I knew religion had something to do with it. I'm not Catholic by faith, but I've lit enough candles to set the world on fire. Because the priests were very tolerant. And I remember the last thing, and trying to get through this in a hurry now, time's going. I did what I had always heard was the unforgivable sin, was to try to take one's own life. And of course, I couldn't even do that. And I don't think there's anything more horrible than to try to end one's life and come to and find out you're still living. I also didn't know that man's laws were based on God's. I didn't to take one's own life, but I didn't know that it was a crime to try to take one's own life, and so I was under arrest. And I remember laying on that stretcher, and as they brought me out, there was a doctor of Oriental descent, and he said, what's the matter, sister? Don't you want to live anymore? And I think there are many moments of truth, and I said to him, no, I don't want to live anymore like I've been living. It seemed to be two of us, and I couldn't separate the two, and I was tired. And so they were to take me out to what was ODC Gallinger Hospital then. I didn't know I was in a locked ward, and here again, this thing of insanity. I'd seen the picture a long time ago, the snake pit. And truly, I was in a snake pit. A friend who was truly a friend would come by to see me. They wouldn't let her in because she was not a member of the family. And as she stood outside of those bars looking into the door, into the room, I hope I never see that expression on anybody's face. It was stark horror. She could not believe this was the friend that she had known. The one that she knew how to go. I was standing there. And with tears streaming down, I said, Kay, did you call the family? She said, yes. I said, is anybody coming? She said, no. I said, did you tell them what kind of place I was in? She said, yes. I said, and nobody's coming? She said, no. And I knew hate then like I hope I never experienced that. That's one thing I think I have lost, is that emotion of hate, most destructive force you can ever have. Most of all, I hated my mother. And I wasn't to learn until many years later that my mother, as a mother, wanted to come, but she had no money. And the sister that I most admired, because she was my alter ego, that we looked physically very much alike, had said to her, no, Helen, let's don't send for her. At least we know where she is. If we bring her home, it'll be the same thing over and over again. So you see, you can have misdirected emotions. But anger got the best of me, and I was determined to come through in spite of them. Now, this was in September of 1953. I was employed, as I said, in the government at the Washington Naval Gun Factory. I made more per dime than I did at my last job because it was skilled labor and work. Under turret lathes and things like that. I was scared to death, but I was there. And I had been laid off not because of my drinking, but because of a shortage of steel. And I had made a decision to drink myself to death, which I couldn't. And I went back to the psychiatrist, And I says to him, he said, well, Miss Turner, how did you feel when you were in the hospital? I said, I didn't drink. He says, well, we have places for people like you. If you'll sign yourself in, you can sign yourself in. Well, I was out. I was crazy, but I wasn't stupid. And I knew if I got in a nut house, they weren't going to let me right out. I'd probably be coming out now, you know, with the street people. So I said, I better read the fine print before I go in. Now, here's what I want to say. That was on a Saturday. And I was to go down Monday because I was maintaining a voting residence still in Pennsylvania to have my congressman or somebody sign. I had two psychiatrists to sign, but I needed his authority. My sponsor called, and I went to an AA meeting. Some people call it coincidental, fate. At that time, I had neither electric nor gas, just out of carelessness. I just didn't pay the bills. But I had, as I said before, what we need. We always have that. I had the means of communication. I had a telephone. And through that, my sponsor talked to me. And she listened. The first woman listened to me so carefully, even God's sounds had frightened me. And I said, do you hear me? And she said, oh, my, yes, I hear you. And thank God they called when they said they would, at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock. I went to that meeting, and I never did get downtown to sign those papers. I have not had a drink since. As I said, you call it fate, coincidence. I call it my God speaking to me. And I always like to close because, as I said to me, the woman alcoholic, I think socially wise, still suffers a little more. If it'll help you mail, you can use it too. But in this same Wade book, this teacher spoke to a woman at the well. And during my drinking, had he spoke to me, I would have answered probably very much the same way she answered. Incidentally, here again is the crazy Mary. These women were all named Mary. The second woman, they were going to stone her because of her actions. There was a time in my drinking that I too would have been stoned. But to me, the most important and significant one of the three was this woman who had suffered so long with an illness that no doctors could cure. And as a great teacher rode through town this day, she pushed through the crowd and humbly said, oh, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I would be made whole. And he in his greatness said, someone touched me, and haven't we all touched him? Thank you.